This week, we discuss Samsung's plan to kill the notch, show you the Pixel 3 and the Google Home Hub, and we'll talk about some sad news happening in the Android world. That's all coming up here on All About Android.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
This episode of All About Android is brought to you by Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Introducing Rate Shield Approval. If you're in the market to buy a home, Rate Shield Approval locks up your rate for up to 90 days while you shop. It's a real game changer. Learn more and get started at rocketmortgage.com/android. And by WordPress. Reach more customers when you build your business website on wordpress.com. Plans start at just $4 a month. Get 15% off any new plan at wordpress.com/allaboutandroid.
Hello and welcome to All About Android. This is episode 392, recorded live on Tuesday, October 23rd, 2018. We are your weekly source for the latest news, hardware, and apps for the Android faithful. And I am Florence Ion.
And I am Ron Richards. And we are down one Jason Howell, who is not here today.
We are.
But we have a wonderful guest in his place.
Nicole Scott of Mobile Geeks. Hi, Nicole. I'm so happy to have you here.
Yeah, thanks for having me. I'm really excited to be on.
Okay, so hey. I'm really curious because I know that you travel quite a bit. And so I'm wondering, well, I guess you don't have to completely reveal your location, but are we on the same continent right now?
No, I'm actually back in Taipei.
Okay.
Last week I flew back to Asia for a Samsung R&D tour, and then I decided to come back to Taipei for a few weeks, and I head back to Germany. So it's all over.
Wow. That's fun.
Oh, man. Yeah. Look, the international reach of this show is just, I'm impressed every week. Nicole, thank you for doing that. And I love the blue wall behind you for our video watchers. That's a great background.
It is. So.
I was kind of checking, I watched the show. And so I know how weird it is when people have boxes and open doors. It's just a bunch of random stuff. So
it's hard sometimes when you don't have the room for your own studio.
Yeah. Well, there we go. Well, we're so glad to have you with us. We've got such great fun stuff to talk about this week. I'm very excited. Right, Flo?
We do. We have a lot. We have a lot of show and tell. But I guess we should tell some stuff about the news.
Well, we should also tell people to make sure they subscribe. Go to twit.tv/AAA. And this might be your first episode of All About Android. Hit that subscribe button wherever you're listening. If you're listening to the audio version, video, watching on YouTube, watching wherever, just subscribe. It's
any
worth it.
Any way you like it.
Yeah. This is because we're all about Android. What else more do you need? So
what else more do you need? And we're
Victor?
Also, sorry. Go ahead, Ron, kick us off.
Victor, why don't you take it away, my friend?
Never stagnant and always innovating. Here's Android news.
Ooh.
Well, maybe innovating.
Contextual, Victor. I love it.
Very contextual.
I was prepared this week.
Nice.
Nicole, we are, of course, referring to an article that you wrote recently titled Why a Stagnant Smartphone Market is Leading to Innovation. And so we kind of wanted to sit down with you a little bit and talk about it because we've been in this whirlwind of just phones coming out the last couple of weeks, new hardware, and it just kind of seems like a little more of the same. But for some reason, it doesn't feel like a bad thing. So I don't know if you want to talk about that a little bit.
Well, there's so many launches that have happened and we all sit there and I kind of got tired of everyone being like, this is innovative. I'm like, is a fingerprint sensor in a display innovative? No. The word innovative actually started meaning when we invented light or electricity, when we turned day into night. You know what I mean? If you really think about what this word means, it really means something that is really game changing. And we've just started saying, okay, this iteration, that means innovation. The fact that anything's improved means that it's innovative. And I disagree with that just because I really feel things are improving, but it's just the ecosystem that's changing, right? like the smartphone now exists in like something with the Google Home, and it's all about like how we're accessing our information and where. It's no longer like, I think the hardware's kind of gotten good enough to a point where I think we can kind of say, okay, sweet, like we have a great phone, like now let's move past like the nuanced technical detail of how it works, which was so important because it was limiting. But now the hardware is no longer limiting, and I think we should be changing the discussion to, okay, here's how we're using our devices in a meaningful way that's changing my life. Like, maybe that's innovative. So I don't know. Yeah. That's
Nicole, I think you're spot on with this. I mean, this is something that I've complained about and struggled with over the years, and that, you know, the smartphone revolution of 2007 or so, first with the iPhone and then followed by Android, really did change the world. I mean, now you look around and you see people on the subway looking at their phones, and you know, there are people who are just doing business on their phones. Like, the things that you could do on your phones have evolved and changed so much. But I like to think about it of other innovations, and like a major invention that changed the world around us was the automobile, right? All of a sudden, you didn't have to rely on a horse or own 2 feet. You could travel long distances in a shorter amount of time. And you just had this like amazing invention of an automobile that was truly innovative. And then you have 40 years of, okay, let's add power locks. Let's add a radio. Let's add, like, you know, continuing to iterate and iterate. But we haven't seen true innovation until the electric car, the hybrid.
Yeah, that's
right?
True.
And so, like, in terms of like product development and adoption and stuff like that, you fall into this stagnant thing where, okay, we figured out the walls of the room we're in now. What can we do to make the room that much better? And I'm just waiting for the next big thing. Like, I, you know, in my lifetime, I've seen computers change the world. I've seen the internet change the world. I've seen phones change the world. I want something else to truly innovate. But my hopes are right now they're dashed on Samsung and their foldable phone. But that's about it. So
where is the innovation? Like, if there is any innovation, if there are any strides being made, Nicole, in your opinion, like, where is it being made? Is it mostly in hardware? Is it mostly in software? Is it going to be an amalgamation of the two? Or do we just need like a new product category to shake things up?
I think I think that we're not going to see that next big thing moment. I just feel like that's not going to come anytime soon, just because the next big thing for me will be how our devices exist within the ecosystem. So like smart city, like e-mobility, mm-hmm. like car sharing, like all of these really cool concepts are the ones that are going to be the way that are going to be the things that significantly change our life. And because they're so real world impacted, I think it's going to be slow. Like, we're not going to have that aha moment of like, we have a press conference and then boom, it's there. Right. I think that moment isn't going to be anytime soon. But like figuring out which IoT standards we have so that we can have more meaningful smart devices around us. That's so boring. But like, maybe that's the interesting thing to watch. It's so boring, though.
Well, I think it's the crossroads of the hardware with the software. I mean, this is like what, you know, my main takeaway from the Google event was that, as exciting, and we're going to talk about your thoughts about the various new Google products that came out later in the show, but the most exciting thing for me from that event was the crossroad between these devices with the crazy AI and the amazing, you know, computing power that Google brings to it. It was the software.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, that's ultimately, that's why I decided to upgrade to the Pixel 3 and just do it, because I wanted all that new stuff. Yeah. No, that's not for everybody. Nicole, going back to phones, I mean, we've got all these new phones to choose from now, and like a couple more coming out, apparently. Is there a reason to be upgrading these days? Like, what do you think?
I think that there is a reason to upgrade if your device is more than a year old. definitely. But I think that this season of smartphone releases has really proven that we've gotten to a point with our smartphones that things are dedicated devices for specific purposes, like the Note 9 for business with the pen, right? So if you're this specific kind of user, this is the kind of phone. The Razer Phone 2, if you're super into gaming, right? The like Huawei's hitting like a pretty like meaty in the middle category, but they're definitely after people who are into photography. So like, it's like, well, what do you need from your device? And now it's about just identifying like what your wants and needs are, and not so much about like, well, which is the best one, Like, I think that like the best one is now relative because the hardware's gotten to that point where we can just be like kind of self-indulgent and choosy.
Are we kind of like at peak innovation in the sense that now companies are just more focused on building ecosystems around us instead of just trying to wow us? They're like, what more can we pile on the things that we've already sold to you, so to speak?
Yeah. No, 100%. I mean, like, we're seeing like Samsung and LG change their narratives to like be smart things, right? It's now about like how everything fits into an ecosystem, which isn't as exciting because it's so much more difficult to explain to people like, okay, now this thing will change the way that you live. Hold on. It's coming. Like, remember that last time when it was like really terrible and it was awful? It's not like that time. It's like new this time. Trust us. So it's difficult to get people on board to kind of like be jazzed about like home innovation stuff. Well, like, I guess we'll find out what you think about the Google Hub, but I wasn't like, oh my God, this Lenovo smart display just changed the way that I live in my kitchen. Just didn't do that for me anyways.
But I think that's the area that could potentially have the most potential. I think, you know, and maybe also Android Auto. I mean, like, the, you know, kind of how technology fits into places where technology currently doesn't. I mean, as new homes get built, if they're being built with smart lights and smart, you know, kind of all the, you know, with Nest thermostats and all this sort of stuff, does the, you know, the Walt Disney home of the future become true? You know, like, that's, and I think that's an area of potential growth, maybe.
Nicole, before we move on, is there anything you just kind of want to leave with people from like just the work that you did for this article and just sort of like thinking up, you know, what does innovation mean at this point in time?
Yeah, I've been thinking a lot about the word innovation because I've been guilty of telling my team, talk about how this phone's innovative. How is the Note 9 innovative? How is this innovative? How is that? And I'm like, focus on innovation. And I realize that I'm part of the problem, right? Like that I'm writing these articles centered around innovation and how things are changing. But really, now it's just about trying to identify how devices are really useful and how they can really change our lives. Like, I think I'm trying to think about the how more than the what now. And that's kind of a shift that's resulted from like the technical innovation, like not necessarily plateauing, but not being in the same place where that itself leads to understanding how the device is going to impact our use case. So, I've been spending a lot of time with that. And like last week at Samsung's R&D center, they actually went through like what innovation meant. And it was like the washing machine and like home appliances, electricity, radio. And it made me realize, I'm like, huh, this is like, these things really mean innovation. And like, now we just need to like look at the smartphone and Android and try to really imagine like how it's going to impact our lives. And it's not necessarily going to be in that one press conference we're going to have the aha. So now I think our work as journalists has gotten harder because it's going to be a little bit more about analysis. So
the aha is more subtle these days.
Yeah.
Just like IoT. Ron, just you've got some news on the apps.
Yeah, so not this isn't innovative news at all, but in fact it's more disturbing, and this could be an argument against everything we've just been talking about. But BuzzFeed News actually published an investigation into an ad fraud scheme that included 125 Android apps, many that were considered legitimate by longtime users. So basically the scheme worked like this. A developer of a successful app or service would get an acquisition offer, which is the dream of anybody who does this. That's, you know, you want to build something and then sell it. And great. A shell company would then protect the app. Dev access by this company would allow them to analyze the ways in which humans are using and interacting the app. Then those behaviors would be programmed into bots to make them look human. And then those bots pose as humans using the app to view ads, earn revenue, and ultimately not be detected as bots, which is just crazy. An original estimate was around $75 million accumulated. That's around one-tenth of the amount earned through the scheme. And the apps included Everything Me, Megacast, Emoji Switcher, and Restaurant Finder, which are all apps that I'm thankful I never used or did. But you know, there's a list of 125 more. You could see it if you go to BuzzFeed. There's a full, it's a great, very in detailed article with great graphics. If you scroll down, the yellow graphics explaining how it would happen. But essentially, like, this is the kind of thing that kills me, because these are very, very smart people who are figuring out how to game apps and bots and make bots look as if they're human and do all this sort of stuff. And when you think about what these people could do with, like, if they were pointed in the direction of good and instead they're pointed in the direction of bad, it kind of breaks my heart. I don't know. It's crazy. Nicole, did you see this article? What did you make of the scheme?
When you kind of dig down into some of the examples, I thought it was very cute how a lot of the bots had bad spelling.
Yeah.
It's so human.
it's 100% terrifying, and it really makes you wonder, you know, how are we good as a people? are we capable of good? I don't know. Because it's true. Like, they're really, really, really smart people who just took something with a lot of potential and made it, not good. Really.
I mean, on one hand, it speaks to, humans' ingenuity and ability to game a system. But on the other hand, like, oh, why couldn't this be, like, I get the pursuit of money, but, like, oh, I wish this was used, these were used for the powers of good so much.
I mean, it's kind of genius. 75 million. That's a lot of money. Yeah. I mean, yeah. Wow, that's like Office Space level scheme.
Yeah, exactly. Crazy. So be careful. But there's no way we would know. There's no, if you're using one of these apps, it's not like it hurt you or did anything like that. But it's crazy.
Yeah,
crazy. Yes.
So. Only download apps that we tell you about. Maybe.
Well, maybe not. Except for when you recommend an app. That's
that's right. I did recommend Unroll Me.
Yeah. So
sorry, everyone.
But unfortunately, this is a bit of a bummer week for news, Flo.
Yeah, it is. We've got some unfortunate news about more staff cuts in tech. So Essential is actually making more cuts to its staff to the tune of around 30% of its workforce. But they got around 120 people. That's quite a significant number. They're making cuts to hardware, marketing, and sales divisions. An Essential spokeswoman said, "We are confident that our sharpened product focus will help us deliver a truly game-changing consumer product." I'm not sure if that's referring specifically to the phone or specifically to forthcoming products or products that were rumored to come out but have not.
So here's that's a great question. Are we ever going to see that home device from them?
That's exactly what I was thinking about. And I was thinking about that. Like, I wonder if that team is left over. I wonder what product it is that they're really referring to.
I mean, it's still on their website. Right. So if you go to essential.com, home is still there. They still show it. It still says coming soon. But I mean, it's just a bad look to announce a company. And it's been at least a year. Right. Yeah. It's been about a year since this all rolled out. A little more than a year now.
It's been a little more than a year. And for those who are wondering if there's going to be a generation two of the Essential phone, Essential's working on a small screen phone at the moment with AI that replies to messages for users automatically, which sounds similar to one of our other pieces of news today from a competitor.
Yeah.
/ from a workplace of Essential Head. Yes. Shall we go into an ad?
Well, I mean, Nicole, are you surprised by Essential seemingly going down the tubes? Or
no, not even a little bit. It's funny. I still see the Essential phone around in like day to day use, and I ask people who are other tech journalists why they're using it, and they're just like, for the love. They have no actual, like, other than like just like a nostalgia. Right. Yeah, I'm not surprised at all. It's like it has hearts and minds, but it doesn't have anything else.
It doesn't have customers. It doesn't have users.
It doesn't have customers. Yeah.
And I think it just shows. Yeah. I think it also shows that you know, people, unfortunately, like Andy Rubin, are, you know, like, it takes a lot to make a hardware startup work. And Andy Rubin had a great background and was the godfather of Android and all stuff like that. Doesn't mean it's going to be a success. You know, the marketplace is fickle.
And is it innovative if all it does exist for is to evoke some sort of nostalgia?
Yeah. Well, not even a little. Yeah.
All right. Nope. Now let's thank our first sponsor of the episode. This episode of All About Android is brought to you by Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. And let's take a minute to pause and talk about buying a home. If you've ever bought a home, you know that because of rising interest rates, there's a lot of unpredictability when it comes to buying a home, and it causes a lot of anxiety with folks. It's a very stressful process buying a home. Well, luckily, our friends at Quicken Loans are doing something about that. They're calling it the power buying process, and here's how it works. So step one, all you got to do is answer a few simple questions, and they'll check your credit for pre-qualified approval. And the second step is Quicken Loans will verify your income, assets, and credit in less than 24 hours to give you a verified approval, which gives you the strength of a cash buyer. And step three, once you're verified, you qualify for their all-new exclusive Rate Shield approval. And this is where it gets this is the magic. This is where it gets amazing. First, they'll lock up your rate for up to 90 days while you shop. Now, that's the best part. If rates go up, your rate stays the same. But if rates go down, your rate also drops. So either way, while you're shopping for a home, you win with the best possible rate that you can have. It's the kind of thinking you'd expect from America's largest mortgage lender. Talking about innovation, this is innovation, folks. To get started, go to rocketmortgage.com/android. Rate Shield approval is only valid on certain 30-year purchase transactions. Additional conditions or exclusions may apply based on Quicken Loans data in comparison to public data records. Equal housing lender, licensed in all 50 states. NMLSconsumeraccess.org, number 3030. That's rocketmortgage.com/android. And we thank Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans for their support and helping making buying houses easier. Thanks, Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. All right, let's get into some hardware. Flo.
Ron.
Flo.
Nicole.
This is what I've been waiting
Ron.
For.
All right, so we have here several devices. First one we're going to jump immediately into is right here. This is the Google Home Hub, and I'm going to actually turn it around so we can get a closer look at it right over here. So as you can see, this is my cat. This is Gabriella. Aww. She is one of the loves of my life, and this photo album was made automatically. Magically, I was really trying hard to say that word, automagically, by Google Photos. And it was one of the first things that I set up on the Google Home Hub. So this right here is basically the best photo album, or excuse me, photo frame that you could buy. It's $150, which really isn't a lot when you factor in what it is that this can do. And I really foresee this being a very popular item.
I feel like the best photo, digital photo frame you can buy really like isn't fair to this device.
That's
because I feel like it demeans what it actually can do. Right.
So, okay. So the photo frame part is the 7-inch LCD display, which isn't just a photo frame. Oh, look at that. I forgot that you can do that. You can actually just go through pictures and then you can, it's the other way that. Still learning how to swipe around, everyone. Where's the home screen? Well, shucks. Okay, so you're supposed to be able to swipe around it. It's got full range speakers, far field mics. It's got an ambient EQ sensor. So actually, I don't know if you can see this on the camera, but there's a very faint red dot right here, and it's actually reading the ambiance of the room so that it can automatically set the brightness on this. I will say that this has not kept me up at all since I received it late last week, and it's pretty dark at night. You can actually barely see the time. So that's how dark it will get in the room so that it doesn't bother you. And then during the day, it's not super bright that it's, super bright light in the room. So again, it's just like a really, that's why they call it the best photo frame. It's just.
But it can do so much more.
It can do so much more. So we have little settings. Let's do some things with it, actually. So.
But if it's the best, But if it's the best photo frame, why is the bezel so ugly? Like I've always kind of wondered that. Like when everyone talks about like photo frames and like all this, like when I think of a photo frame, like when I went to go buy one in the 90s, I'd be like, ooh, this one speaks to the decor of my room. This is just a tablet.
True. Yeah,
it's like it's a tablet like slapped on a base. Like that's really all it is.
True.
Yeah.
So a couple of things you can do with it just to, sorry, I'm just. Okay, well, that was not what I put to cast. Sorry, I meant to put all about Android, but clearly I was listening to something else. Here's the home screen. So as you can see, it's the same home screen that you get with a smart display, and actually today an update went out to some other devices like the Lenovo Smart Display that gets some of the same features that come on this, including multi-room audio, live albums, which is an album that constantly updates, which is what this album is connected to. This is called It's a Gabby. It's a Gabby. And so these are just her constantly updating photos. And the AI is smart enough to figure out that this is my cat. It did mix up a couple of other black and white cats that I have pictures of, but I kind of went in there and took them out. And from there, the AI has been able to just properly capture the right photos. Couple things this can do, right? So it can cast, as you just saw. It can also do this, and actually, warning, I am going to trigger everyone's Google Home right now.
Warning.
Hey, show the front door. Uh-oh. Hold on 1 second. Okay, so that was the wrong thing. I'm sorry, I'm having an assistant problem. My Chromebook heard it and turned it on. Back at my house. Let me try that again. Hey. Okay, we're having Wi-Fi problems with the Google Home Hub right now. So that's why we don't do a lot of live demos with Google, with smart home things.
Yeah, but then this is also to like the point that I was making earlier that like smart home is definitely where the innovation is happening, right? Like you mentioned Android Auto and smart home and the way that like the things from our phone are going to start moving into other devices. And we're like, trust me, this time it's going to work perfectly. But no, that's not it. Like they just keep on being like, no, wait. Like now we got this.
This is
like,
the time. This is the one.
This is the one. Just get this one. I swear. Like it's so hard.
So I do want to just show really quickly over the shoulder shot. If you could see right here, this is the newly revamped Google Home app. And so you can go into the settings and change the ambient mode. And this is where you could load up, and I checked it, so we shouldn't begin. Okay. This is where you can load up. You can get like recent highlights, which is just like a constantly updating album of things you've done recently. Or of course you can choose to make your own live photo album. And, you know, as far as being the best photo album that you have, I will say this has definitely been there. And I could see this just being the kind of gift that you get to give to your family, your loved ones who are far away, who maybe you want to keep in touch with. It does do duo calls. It doesn't do video calls because there's no camera embedded into it, but it does do voice call. So you can get video call from the other line, and you can reply back with voice only.
Two things. Just going back to the ambient mode.
Yes.
It's funny about ambient mode because I have Chromecast in my TV, like baked into my Vizio, and it's I think it's like a full version back of Chromecast software back. But in addition to like photo galleries or whatever, I get like a feed of like photos from news sources and things like that. But the new version of Google Home and the new ambient mode is only your photos and like art. Like they eliminated any sort of feed of other photo sources from anywhere else, which I thought was a really weird decision. So that's just neither here. That's just a side effect of this. But my second question, Flo, for you is, so did you use this like in the home? Like, did you put this in your house and use it as it's meant to be? Or have you just kind of played with it?
Yes, I've been using it as it's meant to be. So this has turned. This is called Upstairs Display, and so
I was going to ask you what room is it in? That's what I'm super curious about.
It's been in the bedroom.
Okay.
And I put it by the bathroom where all my makeup is. So when I'm getting ready, I have a little like display over there, and my husband really likes it because it's just constantly showing pictures of the cat, which is like great, even though she's like laying right there.
I was going to say, is the cat in the room at the time?
Yeah, she is. It is what it is. We love her. I finally got this thing working, by the way. So I just want to show very quickly. Let's do two quick smart home commands. Trigger warning for Google Home. Hey, Google. Okay, it's still not working. Never mind. Okay, I'm sorry,
everyone.
Call it
Google Home? Do you have to call it Google Home, or is the normal wake word?
It's the normal Hey G.
So just okay Google?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I don't know why it's not working. I think it's because it's on a different Wi-Fi network and all this stuff is going. Anyway, so I have been using it as it's supposed to be used at night when I'm adjusting the lights. All my controls come up on here and I can, you know, adjust to the... I have the semi-new interface where it has a nice slider and it shows you controls by room versus by device, which is a lot better because then it bundles in the different devices I have. I have a lot of devices that are connected in my bedroom because I am a masochist. Yes.
have you been playing around much in with the multi-speaker mode? I've always been curious about that. I've always had a couple, but then when I see people who've nailed it in their houses where they have the multi-speaker and multi-room setup working, but then I ask them how long it took and they're like, months. It took us months to get to this stage.
I am a little regretful that I haven't set that up. I was even thinking about it last night and then I just ended up doing something else. But I meant to set that up because this is not a part of any of the home groups that I have set up currently.
Yeah.
Yeah. I set up multi-room on my Google Home. I have a Google Home Mini in the bedroom and a Google Home in the living room. And I set up each individual room. And now I can when I cast Pocket Cast to it, I can choose either the individual devices or the home group to play on both. It's ridiculous because I'm there 20 feet apart because I'm in a one bedroom apartment in New York City. So it's it's more like just a main device and an echo of a device, not an Amazon Echo, but an echo of a device. But I was actually, it was one of those things that I put off forever, but wasn't that hard to set up once you did it. And that was with the old version of Home. So I got to assume they made it easier. I do love the new room device setup in the Home app. I think that's great. I mean, I can see my lights and I can see everything organized by room as opposed to the old. And it made me realize, I'm like, what's the point? Like the old version was just so wrong. Like they really did a good upgrade on this version of the Home app. So
yeah, I'm still kind of getting used to it, honestly. I'm still getting a little used to it. Nicole, have you had much time to play around with it?
Yeah, I have a Google Home as well, and I like them. I like them a lot. It's just I find that for the speaker issue, I end up disconnecting everything, and then I'm like, but I have this really wonderful speaker setup, and I've never I'll get it set up, and then it just disconnects and doesn't work or comes out of time. And the speaker issue for me, because audio is so when it's off, it's impossible. It's impossible to allow in my life. So that's the one issue with all of this smart home stuff is the integration of all of my speakers and them also. Like I would love it when they would be able to know where they are in the room and then set up the acoustics. I'm waiting for these days. That's actually what I want. Different brands of speakers that can actually intelligently figure out where they are and create the right acoustics depending on the room. I mean, we've seen individual solutions with this, but I'm waiting for Google or somebody to kind of come out with that. Okay. You bought all of these really expensive devices. Now let's figure out how they work together. That kind of ecosystem equalizer. I know I'm asking too much. I know I'm asking too much.
I don't think so. I think you're asking just the right amount.
So I'm playing the Backstreet Boys documentary right now on the Google Home Hub, and it gets pretty loud. But it sounds like. It just sounds very small.
There's no bass, right? I mean, there's no presence.
There's a very, fake bass, that makes sense, where it just sounds hollow. Mm-hmm. When you put an ant in a giant cone and they're speaking. Sorry, that was wrong. yes, exactly.
And I mean, it's a speaker on a table. If anything... we've learned from all of the smartphones that, you can actually develop the structure to, resonate the sound within it to kind of actually create that bass. Smartphones are doing it. Why would it not be on that device?
I will say it's not a bad desk buddy. So if you just want to have some ambient music on while you're working, it works pretty well for that. And it's kind of got this low bass of the Google Home, if you guys know what I'm referring to. Yeah. And so it sounds nice, but it's not like super crystal clear. Like I can't always make out the lyrics on some songs, for instance, if it's like too low, you know, which can be a bummer if you're trying to keep it quiet. So, but that is the Google Home Hub. It is not a hub in the sense of it has all these like protocols inside of it so that you can run your smart home, but it is a hub in the sense that it's one centralized place for the Google Assistant in your home. Everybody in the house can use this. The new app lets you easily add family members as you need, lets you easily add devices as you need. I know that Google's even going to start showing some bundles of this sort in their official store, just to kind of lead into that smart home way of life. So I feel like this is going to be a really popular holiday product. It really is like a great picture frame. And
it's a great price point. I mean,
yeah.
Again, the picture frame is not fair to what it can do. Like, I think it just can, it gives you so much more value than a picture frame.
But it's a good entrance point for a lot of people. Yeah. You know, it's not just a picture frame, but it's also like a little TV. So you could use it in the kitchen to like watch your stories, which is pretty much what I use these things for, just to put TV everywhere.
So if I were to buy this for my parents for Christmas, basically I would pitch it to them as, I can call you, you can see my face, but I can't see your face, which is fine because they like looking at my face more than I like looking at theirs, I guess. And you can listen to your podcasts and radios, like radio station stuff on here, and maybe watch some cooking videos.
Oh, yeah.
You watch YouTube. You have full YouTube.
Yeah, full YouTube.
And watch my YouTube videos. Okay.
Yes. Yes, yeah. Or YouTube TV.
And search and ask it questions and get research results. And then depending on, you know, get the weather, get the news, get all that sort of stuff. It's just it's a smart device that can, you know, bring the internet one step closer into a room. I think that's, you know, and even in not connecting to the doorbell or to the thermostat or anything like that, is still at $150. It's a huge value. I think you're right. I think it's going to be a great holiday gift. I just think it's more than a photo frame. That's all.
I know, but that's really what Google's kind of pushing for. They're really pushing for the, like, this is just a great photo frame. So, you know, it's a great photo frame for $150. Yep. Also comes in four colors, by the way. Sand, aqua, great. Chalk, and charcoal. So you have your pick for the season. Yeah. Now, let us go into the companion hardware, which is actually, let me clean this off because now it's very smudgy from that little demo. But the Google Pixel 3, which I got mine in, which I purchased. And as you can see, I've already configured it with Launcher, and changed around my icons and made myself a little wallpaper. And I have to tell you that this feels unlike a Google phone. In fact, I would go as far as to say this is very reminiscent of the LG V30 because it kind of has this like hollow feel to it, which we're going to talk about in just a second. And just like when you tap on the screen and the way it has like this little bit of bounce back, it feels like other phones I've used, whereas the Pixel 2 felt a lot more solidly like placed in there. So that's just like my first observation upon taking it outside of the box. This one right here is the $800. It's $799 starting price. It has a 5.5-inch full HD OLED display. The OLED for me is a little getting used to. For instance, my sunglasses, apparently I can't see it the same way that I used to see the Pixel 2, which makes sense, but it's just getting used to the fact that it's also a lot darker when it's dark and a lot brighter when it's bright. And so it's kind of like this very stark contrast in the display. There is, as you see, no notch. It's just very nice curvatures. Looks like it's all set in there with little frames. We've got dual 8-megapixel front-facing cameras, normal and wide angle. The wide angle is the one that's been showing up in third-party apps. And it's weird because I will show up as a wide angle selfie person and everybody else will show up as like a full, whatever, regular angle person. So I'm getting used to doing my like video chats with friends that way. On the back, it's got look at this back, by the way. This is the not pink color, which is kind of in the middle between a salmon and my husband actually called it flesh colored, which grossed me out a little bit, but it kind of does have that going for it in person. It's a tiny bit like fleshy, and then it has this nice, cool, like neon coral pink button, which I'm really in love with this button. I just love a little accent mark like this. It just makes me happy.
Me too.
The fingerprint scanner is just as easy to use as the last three pixels. The camera app, it fires up as quickly as it ever has. And so that is a 12.2 megapixel dual pixel rear facing camera with a aperture, 1.8 aperture. I haven't really been testing it, but just from like the initial impressions, I can already tell it's an improvement over the Pixel 2, especially in low light. But that zooming in functionality is, I actually didn't bring any samples, and I apologize, but just because I don't have anything I'm super excited to share yet, just pictures of me zooming in on my cat on the stairs, which you've already seen a lot of pictures of her.
I actually got to spend some time with the Pixel 3 in low light when I was in Seoul, and I was impressed. I mean, I still personally like the Note 9 low light quality better, but I was really impressed with like just the detail and the highlights and the AI within the software. I thought the photo quality, but you're right, the zoom I thought was not good.
I don't think it really does anything significantly over digital zoom. I mean, it does a little bit, but it still looks like you zoomed in on the picture in Photoshop and then cropped it there. So it's just, I don't know. I need to play around with it a little bit more. Maybe it works better with landscaping than with cats. Right. Inside, this thing's got Snapdragon 845 with 4 gigs of RAM, 64 or 128 gigs of storage. I got the 64 version. It's got the Titan M security module inside. I'm still kind of leaning into that, figuring out, you know, where that's going to prop up and if I'm really going to interface with it. It's got a 2,915 milliamp battery on the inside, which is only like a tiny bit bigger than last year's phone. But, you know, it's a brand new phone, so battery life has been great, of course. But come back to me in like 9 months and I'll tell you what it's like. Also, Bluetooth 5.0, dual front-facing speakers, which we'll talk about in a second. USB-C on the bottom. And they come, oh, you know, I'm so sorry I forgot to bring these. I forgot to bring the Pixel USB-C earbuds that come in the box.
Oh, so do you like them? You were very excited about those earbuds.
They don't stay in my ear. Like, they will not stay in my ear. And I've just kind of relegated them to the backup pair that I keep in my car in case I go to the BART station and I don't have earphones. Because they're not, they just don't stay in. I guess I have weird ear canals.
All right.
But now, so, yeah. Go ahead, Nicole.
I'd agree with that. I mean, a lot of these new headphones, I find like last year's versions were fine, but this year's versions, they don't fit into my ears. They just kind of like eventually, and if I like forget going running with any of them, like most of the standard headphones that have been coming in the box from most manufacturers, I feel this season are larger. I don't know what it is.
Yeah, apparently you're supposed to like adjust the thread so it fits somehow in your ear and doesn't fall out, but I haven't really figured it out yet. So there is
all right,
that.
So the Pixel, when the Pixel 2 came out, we had the issue of the blue tint in the screen, right?
Yes.
And now the Pixel 3 is out and it looks as if we're not issueless. It looks like an issue has emerged.
Yes. So apparently there have been problems with audio recordings, videos that have poor audio and audio playback. So audio playback, have complained that it just doesn't sound that good. The video recording just sounds...
This is a comparison video, right?
Right. So this is a comparison video from Jerome Ortega on YouTube, kind of to show some of the different environments where he used the Pixel recording. And he found that the tuning that's supposed to reduce background noise, like wind and road noise, isn't super on the money. like it was sort of talked about. So he did a comparison between the Pixel 2 XL, the Pixel 3 XL. So that's kind of an interesting little video to check out if you're curious about what's been going on with that. Android Police as a whole updated article about it just with a statement from Google, which said that, you know, we do extensive user testing of our products to ensure they are tuned for world usage. And we're always looking at additional tuning opportunities based on user feedback. So if you have some feedback, put it out there.
So if I don't have a Google Pixel 3 or an XL, but a friend of mine got the Pixel 3 XL. And after having it for a few days, says he's ready to return it. Said that the speaker performance is really, really bad. And the mic, the microphone record, like the recording mic, is noticeably like on phone calls, like it's not working. And so I don't know if he got a defective unit or if it's tied to these issues. But this is a regular user, like not one of us, like not a Android obsessed, but this is somebody who went to Verizon to get the new phone and was like, the audio issues are so bad on this that I think I have to get it. I'm gonna go back to the Samsung. That was the exact quote from about 4 hours ago.
Oh, wow.
Wow.
So, yeah. So, I mean, I told them to stick it out to see if Google does something about it or announce it or something. But it could be that he has a defective unit. I would at least tell them to go to Verizon and get a different one to see if the same thing is happening. But it seems like given this video and given some of the other stuff that there seems to be a problem somewhere with the speakers and the mic. So,
yeah. Playback is also, there's been a lot of complaints about the fact that the phone just kind of, because it feels hollow on the back, it kind of vibrates when you're listening to audio loudly. And so I just thought this was an interesting, Russell Hawley from Android Central posted a little gift today to show that when the Pixel 3 is playing audio or playing music, it is actually moving enough that it's shaking around just specks of rice. So
that's crazy.
That's how it feels in your hand. And I can attest to that. And to that end, haptic feedback is also very jumpy. So when I'm typing, I can like really feel it.
Yeah. Also in the chat room, Cousin Ajah said, what about the RAM management and apps getting killed when you open the camera? My friend who has the phone also complained about that, said that RAM management is out of control. He said that he'll open up Google Chrome and within seconds it crashes and he needs to reopen it again. Like, it seems something fishy is going on with this phone, at least from the one user I talked to. But it also corroborates with what we're seeing online with everyone's reporting there as well. So,
admittedly, LawnChair was having a hard time at the initial setup process. And I wondered if it was just because I'm using like the beta version and, you know, it's like whatever the new phone or what. But I wonder if that was tied to it. Nicole, have you had like, you know, do you have a Pixel 3 in hand? Are you planning on getting one?
I don't have one in hand, but I did spend some time with one in Seoul last week. And you know when you said it's like feels like the V30?
Yeah.
I totally agree with you, but I loved the V30.
Oh, I so did too. Like, yeah.
I loved it so much. I loved it. But then I know what you mean, that it just doesn't have that same kind of like tank-like quality that the 2 had. But then it's the same thing for me, like when I went from like the G6, which I thought was like a robust tank that I would never crack the display on, that to the V30, which I cracked the display on. Right. So yeah, like it makes me love it. Like, even though I loved that phone, like the fact that I will still crack displays on a regular basis makes me like angry that we're going in this direction again. Like, we got there where we're like, listen, durability matters to customers. People care when they have to spend $200 on replacing their phone. And then it's kind of like, oh, well, people like Samsung will replace your display for free. The carriers now provide services where they're going to fix your display for free. And the phone manufacturers kind of went, oh, okay, we're just going to make phones with displays that will crack. Like, that's the thing about the Pixel 3 that immediately came to mind when I held it, was I'm like, oh, I'm going to crack this display.
That's not good.
Yeah.
Ron, do you have any final thoughts just based on like your experience from the event?
No, I mean, of course, I didn't pick up on any of this stuff because I didn't get any meaningful time with it. I'm still waiting on my review unit. We'll see if I get one. Mm-hmm. I doubt it. But yeah, no, just talking to my friend who got the phone just to hear, you know, at first he was super psyched and was really liked it and was really pro about it. And then a few days later, now he's thinking of bringing it back, which I think is a testament to both the RAM issues and the sound issues. And I'm hoping that it doesn't malign this whole release because it looked pretty solid. So it's a bummer.
Yeah.
But moving on from Google and going back to our topic of innovation, and Nicole, maybe, you know, I'm hoping that maybe you saw this at the event you were at, but at the 2018 Samsung OLED forum in China yesterday, Samsung revealed some pretty cool innovations that they're going to bring to smartphones. I'm already waiting for the foldable phone, right? But these innovations can bring us close to bezel-less and notchless displays. So UPS tech would hide cameras and other sensors under the screen. Pixels above the camera would simply need to be turned off in order for the camera underneath to see through the glass to take the picture. And no word or mention if this is going to be included in the Samsung Galaxy S10 series or not. But Samsung has thus far avoided the notch and looks like their plan is to avoid it altogether and figure out a way to have these sensors and cameras be embedded in the phone, in the display, and avoid the whole notch situation. Nicole, did you see this at the event you were at, or did you see anything about this?
No. They didn't show us that. They basically were just like, listen, we're going to show you where we make them, but don't take any pictures and like close your eyes. Okay.
Wear this blindfold.
Yeah, wear this blindfold. We're going to walk you through this room. Yeah, I mean, Samsung's brilliant at those kinds of things. But I can't wait, actually, for this. It's amazing how many people see a notch and then they assume it's an iPhone still. Like, yeah. Even though most Android phones have a notch. It's almost bizarre to me that this notch phenomenon has remained in the general consumer's purview as an Apple thing. So I think it'll be brilliant to be able to kind of skip, like for Samsung to skip that. I 100% believe they're going to come out with that on the next one.
Yeah.
With my blindfolded walk through the fab. The sense I got.
Yeah. Well, hopefully this combined with the foldable display will say, maybe Samsung will be the ushering in of innovation that we're looking for. Who knows? But all right. Well, Flo, we got an email.
We've got an email. So this one comes from Chuck. Chuck writes, what do you think of this decision by Google, which we will tell you about in just a second? Even Pixel zealots must see that this is a very bad move. Google desperately needs Pixel customers, but instead pushes them away. Regards, Chuck. So Chuck is referring to the news that broke out today that the Pixel Stand was the only wireless charger that the new Pixel 3 phones could charge at 10 watts, and that all third-party chargers can only charge at 5 watts, which cuts that in half. The Pixel Stand utilizes Qi charging, which is an open standard, but Google told Ron Amadio at Ars Technica that the Qi charging is capped at 5 watts on other devices. The Pixel Stand supports the 5-watt Qi standard and Google's own proprietary 10-watt wireless charging tech separately. Google says that certification process is underway via MADE, which is the same certification process that was used for the watch bands that were introduced back when Android Wear was still Android Wear. Made for Google program to allow third-party chargers to achieve these 10-watt speeds. So there will be like approved by Google chargers coming out. This should happen soon, but in the meantime, Pixel Stand, the $80 Pixel Stand, is alone in this high-speed charging capacity. Belkin has the boost-up charger in the works that will support the 10-watt standard, so you can have that to look forward to, and that'll run $60. So wireless charging will be pretty pricey for the Pixel 3. And if you just want to quickly come over my shoulder, I could show you the Pixel Stand that is very proprietary. And
is it worth $80?
You know, I don't know that it is, because this is supposed to essentially, it turns it into a little assistant, so you can go, I'm going to trigger, just warning, hey, see, and then that pops up and stop listening to me. And I have too many assistants at my desk. And when that happens, so when this little assistant icon is on here, this basically functions as like a home hub, but for your phone. So the Pixel turns into like that speaker. And then you can play music from it and command it to do all the things that you would a Google Home speaker, but it's through your phone and it's also getting charged very rapidly, as it says at the bottom. And it is very rapid charging, but I don't know if it's $80 worth. It's a lot more money to tack on to you, an already hefty bill.
Yeah. That was my big thing about it. After you, Nicole.
Yeah, but if you're going to buy a wireless charging stand anyways, like the one that would be relative to that, I guess I'm getting a review unit of ones that's like $60 or $70, like high quality, beautiful Qi wireless charging stands, even at 5 watt, are running at least $50 now. So
yeah, it's true.
Is it like $30 worth to have that? I might say yeah.
That is the cost of a Google Home Mini, right? $30.
Oh, yeah.
Well, a Google Home Mini on sale, I should say.
Yeah.
By the way, you can, this blacks out at night. So as you could see, there's a little like setting over here. So I can just go into, now you know my pattern's fine. you guys knew it already. that one you guys knew. I pretty much just put that on to, anyway. Let's stop talking about my security.
You can change it after the show.
Yes.
It's fine. Yeah.
So there's an option to put the screen off when dark. Do not disturb while it's docked so nobody will bug me. You can set it as a photo frame as you like. Oh, and the other thing is it can be a sunrise alarm. So it'll start to light up yellow, orange, red, and then wake you up, kind of blasting you with color in the face. Yeah, seriously.
Do you like that?
Because now it's dark at like 7 in the morning. When I'm waking up, it's still kind of dark. And so now I kind of have a little like blast to the face, like, wake up, vitamin D from this OLED screen.
All right, then. $80 worth of vitamin D. There you go.
There you go. So.
All right. Let's take a quick break and thank our next sponsor. We want to thank WordPress for sponsoring this episode of All About Android. And listen, I've been working on the internet for many, many more years than I want to count. And now I'm at the point that when I need a website, I always have a vision of what I want it to look like, what I want it to be. And then I choose WordPress.com because with WordPress, there are no limits. I'm free to create the ultimate online hub that is truly mine, with room to grow as my sites get aimed even higher. You can turn your vision into a reality and launch your website on WordPress.com. On WordPress.com, you can choose from hundreds of designs to match your vision, establish your brand, no matter how much design experience you have or don't have. I am a horrible designer, but I make good websites thanks to WordPress. It's hassle-free. WordPress takes care of the hosting, security, and software updates, so you just focus on your site. You can upload images, video, audio, and more, plus import and export content to and from your WordPress website. It's your site, your home, your content. That's what I love about WordPress. They don't force things on you. You don't get stuck in an environment. You can export all your content. You can import old content from older sites. They really make it easy to get your site up and running and look great while you're doing it, which helps you grow your audience and reach new customers. You can use their built-in SEO features and social media features and marketing tools. And with the WordPress app, you can manage your site on the go. You're traveling, you need to make a change, you don't need to find a hotspot or Wi-Fi, get on your laptop, just open up the app, make the change you need to. It's amazing. WordPress, you can launch your website with confidence, knowing that you're going to get help from a 24/7 support team when you need it. WordPress plans start at just $4 a month. And here's the amazing thing. 31% of all websites run on WordPress. Just take a moment and think about that. 31% of the internet is running on WordPress. There's a reason why WordPress is just that good. So right now you can get 50% off any new plan purchase. Find out for yourself. Go to WordPress.com/allaboutandroid to create your website. That's WordPress.com/allaboutandroid for 15% off your new website. That's WordPress.com/allaboutandroid. And we thank WordPress for their support of the show and also for helping us make amazing websites. Thank you, WordPress. And that said, let's get into the apps. All right, so a couple of weeks ago we were talking about the new approach to the European Union that Google is taking in the wake of the landmark decision against them, the antitrust suit and all that fun stuff. Now Google's going to be charging for the Google App Suite, and we're wondering how much it would cost folks and whatever. Well, leaked documents show that the pricing of Google's App Suite as the solution of its antitrust ruling in the EU is revealing, thanks to The Verge, who saw these documents. They show the fee schedule runs as high as $40 per device to install the Google Mobile Services App Suite. Country and pixel density appears to be the cost differentiator. High density equals higher cost. Low density equals lower cost. And Google is offering agreements where it would cover some slash all of the associated costs when a company chooses to install Chrome and Google Search on their devices. Without Chrome or Search, the company would be on the hook for more cost payout. And this is going to apply to devices activated on and after February 1st, 2019. So if you live in the European Union and you're on a device manufacturer that chooses not to have Chrome and Google Search installed, you have to pay a little more. Nicole, what as someone who's a world traveler like yourself, what kind of impact do you think this is going to have on Google's presence in the EU?
I don't think Google's going anywhere, but I think that we're going to start to see companies like Samsung. It'll be interesting to see if they do absorb the cost or they make pass it on the consumer. I mean, like, the phones are getting so much more expensive anyways. Like, what's another $30, I guess? $40 bucks on top of like a $1,000 phone. But it seems like a very, like, Europeans or like Germans in general would prefer that you spam them with all of the preloaded apps to lower the cost.
Interesting.
There's a huge category of people that, like, as long as the apps are somewhat safe and they can, like, remove them completely from the phone, Asus was bad at that. Asus would just put so much shit onto your phone, and a lot of it was actually kind of dangerous that you couldn't get actually out. So people in Europe tended to shy away from a lot of Asus phones because of the just sheer volume of preloads. But I think for a $40 price cut, most people won't care. But I don't think it's going to impact the presence at all.
Yeah, it's going to be, I think the next step in this is to see what the manufacturers choose and what the, you know, like, who, it's going to be a Mexican standoff. Who's going to be the first manufacturer to be like, no, I don't want that. And then will they use it as a market differentiator to be like, get your phone cheaper without Google, or what, you know, like, who knows what, how it's going to play out in the marketplace at this point.
Get a phone without Google. Apply now.
Oh. Yeah.
Speaking of moving on to doing things without Google, I suppose I tried to make this segue work. Hyperion is a new launcher by the makers of Substratum, which, new launchers are always exciting because they give you different choice of user experience on your Android phone. And so the folks behind Substratum have a new launcher called Hyperion. It's material themed all throughout, and it offers thorough customization of your desktop, your dock, your icons, the grid, animations, app drawer. It also offers support for adaptive icons, notification dots, and app shortcuts, so you won't miss out on those things. And it has gesture support. So if you're looking for just something new to try, Hyperion Launcher is...
I love a good launcher.
Yeah, I do too. As you can see, I'm using Launcher myself.
It's funny. It's I saw this in the doc, and I was like, "Oh, I guess I'm glad I didn't bring that to the arena tonight." So,
okay.
So actually, I mean, that's a good Nicole. What phone is your current daily driver phone, and what launch? And are you using a different launcher than the regular one, or?
I just moved on to the Note 9. Haven't lived on this one yet, and I've been using the OnePlus 6. As my daily for the past few months.
That's Ron's current.
Me too. I'm on it. I'm on the OnePlus 6. Thanks to Flo. Love it.
Totally love it. But the funny thing is, I've had this one maybe like a week and a half, and I realized that when I was walking around last night, I was like, oh, I'll come back and take that picture with the Note 9 was actually something that I went and did. I like went back, got it, and then returned to the location, took a photo of the Taipei 101, and then carried on with my life.
Oh, wow.
Like, Yeah. I thought the low light on the six, the OnePlus 6 was good, but it's so much better just on the Note. And I hadn't really realized it until I've just been in like so many great nighttime scenarios in Asia. I guess maybe like when I was in the US for the past month, the night didn't call to me as much to take photos of. So I didn't miss it. But yeah, that's the OnePlus 6. And you just moved to the 3? What did you move from, Flo? Where were you on before?
Oh, I just moved from the Pixel 2. Not very exciting these days. Not very exciting these days.
Not very exciting. So I'll tell you what is exciting. Our next email from Matt from Louisville, Kentucky writes in, and Matt says, I ordered the white 128 gig Pixel 3 XL through Project Fi the very moment it went live on October 9th. Right away at a ship date of November 2nd or 3rd. As you're well aware, people have been receiving their phones left and right since last week. Most of those are from the Google store, but others are receiving their Project Fi orders. If they ordered not pink or black, Most of those are from the Google store, but others are receiving their Project Fi orders if they ordered not pink or black. I'm not certain if anyone has received the 128 gig white model from Project Fi yet, but I know for a fact that many people have received the white version through the Google store. To add insult to injury, this evening I received an email from Google stating that my phone is now expected to be delivered November 16th or 17th. I'm sure I'm not alone, and this is just a huge disappointment. And get this, it doesn't stop there. On Sunday, just for the heck of it, I went ahead and ordered the same phone on the Google store. The delivery date of the one I ordered on the 21st is sooner than the one I ordered from Project Fi almost 2 weeks earlier. So it looks like Google's having some fulfillment priority issues and fulfilling Google Store orders before Project Fi orders, which is a bummer. Yes. I don't know if anyone else is experiencing this, but I don't know. It's tough. Sorry, you got to wait. That sucks.
It does. But yeah, you know what? On the plus side, you bought it unlocked from the Google Store and you're getting it sooner. So
yeah.
Now you can use it anywhere you want. You don't want to use Project Fi? That's fine. Just go buy a SIM card. Put it in there. Roam free.
Roam free.
It's good to be free.
All right. Well, speaking of freedom, let's exert our freedom in the arena.
So many enter, but only one lives. Android Arena.
All right. I mean, this one is neck and neck, Flo. I don't know if you looked at these results.
Oh, no, actually, I haven't. Let's see. Last week's poll.
It's insane because I'm looking at it. It looks as if the winner is winning by 1 point, which is amazing. So last week, we had Mateo in the studio, and it looks as if Goat won by one vote. Goat got 40% of the vote with 117 votes. Second place was that your app or Jason's Touch Retouch?
That's my app.
Flo's app comes in second, losing by 1 point, 116 points.
Wait, refresh it.
No, it's as I was reading it. No. So Flo, you come in second with Touch Retouch. I came in third with Assistant Shortcuts, which got 14% of the vote. And Jason comes in last at Spire Studio with 6% of the vote. And those results, which, by the way, are not reflective of what just happened, Florence, through 42 weeks of the arena, the guests are in the lead with 126 points. I'm in second place with 106 points. I'm 20 points behind. Jason's in third with 99 points. And Flo, you're in last with 88 points. And at this point, I would like, and thank you to Wade County in the chat room, while we're doing in the arena, the chat room folks watching along, we have 10 weeks left in the year. And I want to say like only 9, because don't we take a week off for the holidays? Mm-hmm. At least 1 week, maybe 2. So let's assume there are 9 weeks left. Is it mathematically possible for any of us to beat the guests? That's your homework assignment while we're doing the arena chat room. So we'll figure that out. We'll circle back to it. But that said, I think I go first since I came in last, and then Nicole will go second, and then Flo, you'll go last. Mm-hmm. Does that work?
Sounds
for you?
Okay, good cool. to me. And then I will be demoing for the two of you.
All right, cool. So my app actually costs $4.99 in the Play Store, which seems a little pricey, But this is super cool, and I'm going to explain it to you. If you've ever played Warcraft 3 or other kind of real-time strategy kind of games and stuff like that, where you're looking down on a map, and oftentimes there's what they call the fog of war or the fog of a map. Actually, Victor, if you can go away from Flow and go to the Google Play Store, that'd be great. This app is called Fog of World. It's an unreleased app, so it's brand new. But essentially, it's taking the same concept as a real-time strategy game with the fog over the map and applying it to the real world and your travels. As you travel the world, more spaces of the map become less foggy, the places that you've adventured to. And then you also get badges and tokens and stuff like that the more you travel in different regions and different areas. So now, Flo, if you've got the app up, we can kind of show everybody it. Mm-hmm. So essentially this is looking, and this is hard to tell because you just installed it, and so you don't really have a bunch of data in there. But if you tap on the location button down at the bottom, in the bottom left, it will find your location. It'll go to you, right? And so it's basically just a map. It shows you where you are. But if you go in the upper left-hand corner, you can see the different options within the map itself. Neat little interface. But if you click on passport, you can see you swipe all the way to the right, all the way to the right. Other direction. To the right. Thank you. Okay, yeah. So you see the world. Right now you're level zero. You've only been to one territory out of 249, and you haven't explored any areas. As you travel, it will keep track of you and keep track of the mileage that you travel and how much of the world you have discovered. But what's really super neat, if you hit the menu button as well and go to badges, the upper left, yep, up there, go to badges. You can see there's different, I'm seeing different things because I created an account. I guess you didn't create an account. If tap on that. Anyway, there are lots of badges that you get that you unlock. Like you achieve a tourist badge or there's a pirate badge. There's fun stuff, flying badge, all this neat kind of stuff. But my whole thing is that I've been using Google for years now, and I've got all this data in Google Maps. You can actually, and you picked up on it, you can import data from Google Maps. So if you go into your account on Google Maps and export what they call a KML file, mm-hmm. You can go into your location in history and export specific days or your entire location history, import it into this, and reveal how much traveling you've done and what level that you're at.
Oh, sweet.
And then yeah, isn't that cool? Mm. And then you can keep using this to explore more of the world. If you go back to the menu button in the upper left-hand corner and go to settings, you'll see here that under map, you can choose the map style, whether you want to use Google Maps or AMAP from China, and whether you want to use the standard satellite view or hybrid. I did standard. You can change the colors and all this sort of stuff. But then swipe down from this card. And if you go to fog rendering mode, right? So you can choose the high quality mode and energy efficient mode or the battery saver mode. Go to the high quality mode for now, right? And I wanted to see that message though. So if you can tap a high quality mode again.
Sorry.
Yeah. There you go. Okay, go high quality. So if you go high quality mode, it says it renders high quality fog all the time. This does take more battery life from your phone. It is using location services. So if you're worried about draining it, you can go in energy efficient mode, which will kind of balance the fog quality with the map area. So close all that. Just go back to the map. If you're into traveling and you're into adventure, I feel like this is like right up somebody like Mateo's, mm-hmm. our friend of the show, Mateo's alley. It's really cool to kind of help discover the world around you and make traveling and adventuring kind of fun. So check out Fog of the World. It's $4.99 in the Google Play Store. Super, super cool. The importing data from Google Maps is really neat as well too. So Fog of the World. There you go.
I'm looking forward to importing all my data and saying, oh man, that's going to be exciting.
Yeah. What's really cool is that you can sync it with your Google Drive account or with a Dropbox account. So wherever you drop those KML files, the phone will sync it. And then you can import that and show more of the world that you discover. Yeah.
Oh, and that way, yeah.
Yeah. It makes the whole world a game basically, which is kind of cool.
Fun. So,
yeah.
That sounds fun.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm in. I'll play.
Oh, nice.
For $4.99.
All right,
why not?
All right.
Yeah.
Support your devs.
Yes, support your dev. Yeah. And Nicole, later on, we'll tell you where you can vote. If you want to vote for the app for Fuck of the World, you can vote there.
All right.
Although, all right. Nicole, now it's your turn for the app arena.
Now it's my turn. So I don't actually suffer from migraines, but I have a few friends that do. Yeah. And so this migraine buddy apparently has changed their life.
Wow.
Which to me was like a pretty big statement. So it's initially a free app, but it offers like the option for you to give data to your doctor or identify your triggers. But the really cool thing about it is that it's not just about like tracking. There's actually a like real world component to it where you can see what other people are like, if they're experiencing migraines at the same time as you, right? So if they're using the app, you can actually figure out like, say, okay, my migraines are pressure related, right? Mm-hmm. So, and then you can see if like other people in the region are getting triggered by the same types of headaches. And then actually, my friends have figured out like what they can do to help moderate their migraines based around the location data. So I thought that that was really interesting, like what's happening with people around them. And just like the access to the doctors as well was something that one of my friends paid for. So that's the in-app purchase, right? That you can actually like talk to a medical professional who can go through your specific.
Interesting.
So, yeah. So that was kind of interesting for her.
We have reports.
Here. Yeah.
Medication dosages.
Medical reports. And then also like, there are things that happen like for other migraine apps, like is it caffeine? Is it the amount of sleep? Is it, you know, like all the standard things that you kind of like have to figure out whether or not like, or like what's causing your migraines. But for me, it was the location data and just like the AI usefulness that like the app seemed to like make like well thought out recommendations. And it wasn't just you looking at the data trying to figure it out. Being like, oh, is it, you know, these days that I get them? Apparently the feedback is really good. Oh, so yeah, if you suffer from migraines, like this could be life-changing.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Oh, wow. Okay. So it's literally a log for your migraines.
Yeah. So you could like to do the pain intensity. Like there's even, if you click on some of them, I'm not sure where it is, but you can actually pinpoint on your face, like what parts of your face are like having like what level of pain. So it can be like the back of your head, or like one eye is experiencing a 9 and the back of your head is experiencing a 6. Right. So you can even, here it is. So you can like really kind of like tune in to like where the pain is at. And then when you show this to your doctor, you can kind of like talk about it like a little more meaningfully than I had a headache.
Yeah.
It was a migraine that went on forever. It was in one eye, but then you don't remember that it was also in a few different places of your face. So like how it was treated was another one. And also I liked that it with the caffeine and the food and the drinking water, I thought were kind of good ones.
That's my routine.
That's the one?
Ice packs, caffeine, water, and a heat pad. Just all of it at once. This is pretty cool.
Yeah, very cool. My sister suffers from migraines, and she has Android, so maybe I will get her on this. Yeah.
Cool.
Yeah,
all right.
It's not necessarily a new app, but I feel like the evolution over the last few years has made this app like quite robust and very useful, like more useful than most other migraine apps that everyone that I know has tried, basically.
Yeah, and you can help your doctor by showing up with a bunch of logs when you have a problem, like coming in saying, okay, for the last 2 weeks, this is how it's been. It can really help people. You can really help you get diagnosed. And that's why these apps are a great idea. Also, when they have a cool interface, helps you not think about your migraine. Maybe.
Maybe. At least they're dark. It's dark themed.
Yeah, at least. At least they got that part.
A good use of the dark theme.
Cool. All right. So that's Migraine Buddy, if you're interested. My app is next. And it's just a chill app for people who, you know, those apps where you kind of just want to like go in and out, but you don't want to like quest or spend like 20 minutes collecting things. You literally just want to tap around a couple of, just to kind of keep yourself busy, you know, because they say idle hands are the devil's playground, and there was a movie about it, and Halloween's coming up, so it's all on theme. So this is called Terrarium Garden Idle, and it's all about idly handling a terrarium. Now, the thing about this app is it's completely free, but there are ads. And if you can put up with the ads, you will find that the gameplay kind of makes up for it, because the animations are really cute and you can level up in this thing pretty fast. So if you just like instant gratification, this is great. So what you do is you collect little, these are like little... I forgot what they are, but they're like the little coins that you collect in the, they're air bubbles, mm-hmm. actually. So you collect the little air bubbles, and that's how you upgrade and add plants to your terrarium. And so you can upgrade them at once. And as you leave this running in the background, it just keeps collecting air, right? Because that's what plants do. Oxygen, not air. They keep collecting oxygen because plants need oxygen to live. And so you can upgrade them pretty easily. It just depends on how much oxygen you have. And when you're ready to plant a new one, you can just easily add it there. And then if you want to accelerate it, you can watch an ad and it'll grow, or you can just wait for it to grow like everything else. And the thing about this is if you just need to tap around, you can actually just tap each plant to add to your oxygen meter. And so the more that you add, the more you can upgrade your plants, the more that you can advance in adding to your terrarium. So right now I've got another, an aloe vera plant going. And then eventually you increase levels and you can upgrade to different plants. And it just like, it just keeps going and going, kind of gives you that gratification. And to upgrade, there's also little tools that you can use, like boosters. So you got like the Miracle Grow over here, you got the pesticide, you know, and then you've got the regular water, and it helps you grow all of your plants so that you can watch them. And then when you're ready to level up, you get a bonus. Yes, I like you, but I don't want to rate you right now. So, and it's got a cute little soundtrack can't hear right now. There it is. It's got a cute little soundtrack. A little drop.
There it is. Little bubbles. little bubbles. Nice. Tiny bubbles.
Yeah. Tiny little bubbles. So, you know,
tiny
just
little bubbles.
Just an easy little game to help you chill. Very ad supported, cool. though. So if you don't mind.
All right.
But yeah, that's Terrarium Garden Idle. Free with ads.
All right, nice. So that's three apps for you to vote for. If you go to twit.to/AAApoll392, that's twit.to/AAApoll392, you can vote. Let us know which app you want. Some people are already in there voting because Jason set this up earlier today. Mm-hmm. But you can vote for Fog of World, Terrarium Garden Idol, or Migraine Buddy. Victor, I'm curious where you're going to go. I don't know if you, Fog of World, thank you for your support. Right. So there you go. And according to Wade County in the chat room, Flo could still win if she wins every week and we don't invite guests on the show anymore. Which I don't think that's going to happen. But Flo, if you win every week, you know, technically you could still win. So we're not eliminated yet. So you never know.
It's all right.
So thank you for that. I do want to keep track. I want everyone to keep track mathematically when we're eventually eliminated, because this truly is the year of the guests.
Yeah.
And Nicole, you represented the guests so well just now in the arena. So great job.
Yes. Yes, you did.
All right. Success.
The very helpful app. Yes. Nicole, thanks so much for joining us today and just for being here and for being a bright shining star. Do you have anything that you would like to leave with our viewers and our listeners, maybe where they can find you or anything that you have coming up?
Yeah. So you can find me on Twitter, Nicole_Scooter. I run mobilegeeks.com, but I also run a German website, mobilegeeks.de. I'm slightly more active in German these days than I am in English, which is more interesting. Yeah, I'm digging what's happening in Europe. There's just so much political news and like web commentary that doesn't, the people in the U.S. don't care, basically. it's just completely irrelevant. But yeah, like there's a lot of interesting web commentary. But what's coming up? I don't know. More cars. I cover a lot of cars.
Oh yeah, that's true.
Yeah, like I was just in Marseille with BMW self-driving bike. I've got some reviews of the new infotainment systems on the Audi A8 the Mercedes A-Class. They all have the same, like the naming structure of cars is just as bad as smartphones.
Yeah, it is.
So I cover a lot of the mobility industry now because like I've been saying, smartphones are so important and integral, but they're a part of a larger ecosystem. And if we want to track where innovation is really happening, it's, for me, it's more about like how we're kind of using our devices and how they're fitting into kind of a larger picture. So that's me and my coverage in a nutshell, I guess.
Cool.
Cool.
Yeah.
Very cool.
Yeah. And thanks for having me on, Flo. I haven't seen your face enough, so this was good.
I know, I'm hiding out in the suburbs more these days.
That's awesome.
Ron, what have you got going on?
Well, I don't see your face enough either, Flo,
it's
to
true.
Be honest.
I know.
Folks, you can follow me on Twitter at RonXO and on Instagram at RonXO. And I've been promoting it every week, but I'll do it again. My new podcast, Finale Podcast, you can find it at finalepodcast.com, where we talk about the last episode of a series that my co-host has not watched any episodes of. This week, we're talking about Boardwalk Empire, one of my favorite shows, and I loved every episode of it. She had never seen anything of it. And the results are surprising. So give it a listen. We're on Google Podcasts now. We're also on Spotify if you like Spotify, so check us out there. Finalepodcast.com. Please go subscribe.
Thank you, That's Ron.
It. You're welcome.
And for all your support in the chat room and beyond. As for me, I've actually updated my website at florenceion.com, and I've just been having a lot of stuff posting. And actually, I just wanted to give a special little plug to a friend of the show, Juan Bagnell, who had me on his creator podcast on the Some Gadget Guy podcast. And we just had a really great conversation about the creative process, how we were influenced, you know, by as children by the work that we do now. And so it was like an hour long convo with my buddy that was just great. So go give that a listen.
I'm jealous of that. He's great. He's so much fun.
Yeah. It is. Yeah. I really appreciated the space for that conversation because I feel like it's something we don't talk a lot about because the internet is a very creative place.
It is. that's a great photo.
Juan, nailing it.
Anyway, you can actually find the link for that at my website, florenceion.com, if you have a hard time finding it at the Some Gadget Guy site. So that's it for this week. Thank you to both
nice.
Of you.
Good stuff. Good job,
yeah,
Flo.
Thank
for
you.
Being here.
Thank you, Nicole.
Yes. Oh, thanks for having me. Yeah, really.
Sometimes it's a little hard with the TVs. But so that's it for this week. If you'd like to leave us a voicemail or give them to us, you could call us at 347-SHOW-AAA. You can also send us emails at AAA@twit.tv. We do read them. Or you can tweet us at Android Show. We've also got a list of all the apps that have been featured in the arena at twit.to/Android apps and stats at twit.to/arena stats. If you need show notes and past episodes, you can get that at twit.tv/AAA. You can come watch the show live if you'd like to come see us in Petaluma. You can get tickets at twit.tv. It's free. We just need to know to put out a chair for you. Or you can catch us live on the stream here every Tuesday starting at 5 p.m. Pacific at twit.tv/live. Thank you everyone for tuning in this week, and we will be back next week. And I promise to release Jason from this Tamagotchi. Thanks, everyone.